All right, that's the second bell. Open your Bibles to the book of Ephesians. We'll summarize the ending of chapter 4 as we begin our class. There's two reasons. One is to refresh our memory for what we studied, and another is because chapter 5, where we're going to begin today, has this little word called therefore, which tends to mean that there's some applicability back to the preceding verses. I left Brent a couple of extra verses to cover the other night, and that kind of shorted him on time, I think. So I think, in fairness, we need to go back and try to refresh our memories a little bit. Basically, it's saying don't walk like the Gentiles. The futility of their mind being darkened in their understanding. Again, I think most of us have an appreciation for, not appreciation, but an understanding of what the Gentile world of that day was like, particularly in Ephesus. The temple of Aphrodite was there, and the worship that was associated with that had a great deal to do with licentiousness and sexual immorality. And these Gentiles would have come out of that, many of them, maybe had been widely influenced by that kind of lifestyle, and that fleshly appeal may have been something that they still struggled with. And he's telling them and telling us, you know, don't go back to that kind of thing. Again, that's kind of, and it can even become callous to that kind of thing. You can become to a point where it doesn't bother you anymore if you participate in that kind of thing to that extent. And that's what he's saying. Don't do that. Lay aside that old man. Put on the new man. And we looked at some things, and Brent looked at several things here, several characteristics that we are to stop doing and then start doing. Don't lie. Speak the truth. Be angry and don't sin. Don't steal. Work. Let your speech be pure. Let it be edifying. Put away bitterness, wrath, anger, slander. Be kind, tender-hearted, and forgiving. One commentator noted the applicability of a lot of these characteristics in the marriage relationship. It's not just limited to the marriage relationship, but in the marriage relationship especially. Several of these are things, if we're not careful, could become part of that. Bitterness, anger. Instead, we're to be kind and tender-hearted and forgiving. And that's something not only in marriage relationship, but all relationships with one another. So he's kind of laying those things out, and I forgot to print my charts, that's why I keep turning around. But he's laying out these things, and he's going to say something else here as we start chapter 5. Does anybody have a comment on any of those? Yeah, Steve, for those who couldn't hear, and I won't be able to do justice to the way you put it, but it's talking about get rid of these things, fill them up with good things. And I think most of us have an appreciation of that, even with our time. You've talked about, there's an old saying, the idle mind's the devil's workshop. It's not in the Bible, but it's an idea that makes sense. Fill your lives up with doing good things. Fill your lives up with things that are pure and good, and you won't give place just for some of these bad things. Just like the one, work with your hands. I think it actually says, I don't have it up there, work with your hands rather than steal. You know, if you're out busy working and doing what you're supposed to be doing, you're not going to have the opportunity or have as many opportunities and temptation to go out and steal. And I realize stealing for a lot of us, hopefully, is not a big deal. But some of these other things could be, or any of them could be. The thing I think about any time I read this, the listing of this, I have to remind myself, this is written to Christians. This is written to Christians, and we're Christians. Christians sometimes struggle with these things. And I'm afraid some in the world have the idea that Christians are just, they don't do any of these things. And you've got it perfectly. What I'm trying to get across is God understands that we struggle with different things. I'm not trying to excuse those at all. But if you struggle with those and you have problems with those, don't give up. If you do, keep working, keep trying. Keep trying to live right. That's the point I'm trying to make. All right, let's go into chapter 5. Very first verse, imitate God. Be imitators of God as beloved children. What do you think about, what comes to your mind when you think of a child imitating something? He's often going to see what his parents do. Exactly. I've even seen children follow along their parent or dad or something and even try to walk in the same steps. Literally. Particularly if there's a snow. We don't get a lot of that, but you would even see that sometimes where the parent has walked, the child's following right behind. And that's the idea. Children do imitate their parents. And that is what that's saying here with respect to us and God. We're to be imitators of God. Walk in what? In love. I was impressed by so many times in this, not only in this chapter, but the previous chapter, the idea of in love. These various things are being motivated by love. I'm afraid sometimes we don't stress that enough in our efforts to try to make sure that we're getting everything right doctrinally, which we should. Sometimes we forget to emphasize the motivation for what we're to be doing. I thought Tracy had a good lesson the other night when he emphasized in debates. And I think we'll even see that here, speaking the truth in love. Sometimes we're out to win a debate and so that we can be the victor and be the one that's right, rather than having a love for the other person and really trying to get at the truth. We're to be motivated by love. Walk in love. And who is the example here that he gives? Christ. Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us. An offering and a sacrifice to God as what? Fragrant aroma. You smell a lot of fragrant aromas this time of year, don't you? You go place to place. People light candles and have a good smell. I love walking in a place and just taking that in. It's a nice smell. Not just this time of year, all the year. A lot of people do it all the time. But that's the idea here. And that's going back to, really, it's hearkening back to the Old Testament, isn't it? The type of sacrifices that would have been given, that would have been a smell that went up, and it is as if that aroma went up and was pleasing to God. Well, when we walk in love, when we do the things we're supposed to do, we become that offering. Our living the way we're supposed to live becomes pleasing to God. And there's an idea about being pleasing to God coming up here again. But any immorality, what's the word here used in other versions? Fornication used in other versions? That word is a very broad term. It would include any type of sexual immorality. From homosexuality to adultery to relations between unmarried people. It's a very broad term. Or any impurity, I think the word there is uncleanness. Or what else? Covetousness or greed. Does it seem a little odd to you that greed is thrown in there with those other two? It strikes me a little odd. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the way God did it. I'm just saying I wouldn't expect to have seen greed there, but it's there. Or covetousness. What is covetousness? Yeah, I'd say it's an inordinate desire for something of someone that belongs to something else. It could be a lot of different things, material things. And it's almost as if we are totally giving ourselves up to do whatever we have to do to get that. We're consumed by it. It doesn't mean, I don't think, to see someone with a nice coat or something, say, well, I'd like to have a coat like that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But it's an inordinate type of desire. And it's thrown in here right with immorality and impurity. Now, it even talks about it again here. We'll say that here for just a minute. There must be no filthiness or silly talk or coarse jesting. which are not fitting. You know, one thing I was impressed by with this run of verses is that I didn't have to go hunting a whole lot to figure out what it was saying. I didn't have to go and rely on a lot of commentaries to tell me what this means. It's pretty straightforward. I think we can understand this. Filthiness, dirty jokes, I think, would fall into this category. The word here for coarse jesting, and I did look at a commentator here, but I'd heard this before. Sort of a double entendre, I think it's called, where someone takes a word that's very innocent in its meaning and makes it into something dirty or ugly. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, there's people that I've worked with in the past. You can't even make an innocent expression around them. They're going to take that and they're going to twist it and make it sound like something vulgar. That's the very kind of thing I think is being talked about here. If we're not careful, that sounds a little funny. We might want to laugh at that. We'll find ourselves being drawn into that. We can't do that. That's what he's telling us. Yeah, Brother Lambert points out that this isn't that hard, that they would have understood very, very well what's being talked about. Again, think about that society. Think about that fleshly appeal that characterized that society. Did you see how a Christian might be drawn into that? Think about our society today. Just watching a football game on television. And they go to the commercials and they're showing some sensual commercial to try to get people to buy beer. And if we're not careful, we'll be drawn into that. And again, this is really on the subject of talk itself. No filthiness or silly talk. I tell you, it's hard in a work situation. People are always bringing up, just right outside my door here, a guy jabbering, and he's a good guy in a lot of ways. He's a good worker. But it's bothersome sometimes to hear some of the things he talks about with other people. And we can't get drawn into that. Again, particularly I think a lot of us understand we should not be telling dirty jokes, but if we're not careful, we'll get caught into this coarse jesting thing. Again, taking something that's... And I don't want to use an example because it wouldn't sound good, but I think you know what we're talking about. But what would we be doing instead? Giving of thanks. See, sometimes he puts something, don't do this, but be doing this instead. And he talks about a little bit more about this run of immoral, impure covetousness. It just really impresses me that covetousness is thrown in here with those. We think of the sexual sins. Most of us understand that. But does covetousness belong? Well, yes, it does. You know with certainty, verse 5, no immoral or impure person, as my version has it, or covetous man. And what is covetousness equated with? In this verse and other verses, idolatry. You ever thought about it that way? For a long time, the Jews had a problem with idolatry, didn't they? They were drawn to that, and there were a lot of reasons for that. They had been influenced by that in Egypt. And it took a long time to eradicate that. There was a point at which I believe that idolatry was completely eliminated. But what this is equating idolatry to is covetousness. Again, it gets to a point where we have to have something and it becomes just our nature to want to... We revolve our entire lives around it. And that's all we think about. And again, a covetous man who is an idolater has no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Any comments that any of you have here? God puts covetousness right along with these other sins. That's something to think about. Let no one deceive you with empty words. What do you think he's thinking about there? Well, the thing that I read and the thing I thought about too, there could have been someone there in that society who would have said, yeah, there's nothing wrong with these kind of things. And it made me think of something back, I guess it was in the 70s or 80s when videotapes came out and people started selling those and the way Christians justified some of those. Well, you can watch it and it won't affect you. I heard a Christian say that one time. That preached. He definitely wouldn't agree with that now. I think he definitely would just say that was wrong now. But I did hear one say that one time. Well, you can watch this, and you know, as long as you keep it in your home, it wouldn't affect you. And I'm not talking about pornography necessarily. Well, I guess in some senses it could have been. But I'm talking about R-rated movies that had scenes in them that shouldn't have been in them. And he was justifying those. And I think that was just empty words trying to deceive somebody. I don't think he was purposely. I think he really probably was trying to justify it himself. You can be deceived by that kind of thing. And we can have ourselves deceived into thinking that we're not being affected by some of these things when we really are. That's the kind of thing that comes to my mind. Right. Yeah, Steve points out these would have been justified by the common people of that society, and they are today as well. Think about Ephesus and had that big temple there. What was the big disturbance that happened in Ephesus in the book of Acts? Remember that? There was a big disturbance. What was it about? Diana at the silversmiths. They got all stirred up because here comes this guy. He's preaching that gods made with hands aren't really gods at all, and apparently people being converted away from that. And what were they worried about? Their livelihood. They're worried about their money. Well, people count that way today. Don't be deceived by empty words, I think is the point. Yeah. Don't be partakers with him. You're right. Verse 7. That's exactly right. As Doug points out, he pulls verse 7 in with this. And I think that's a very good point. Don't be partakers with them in this. Remember how you were living, verse 8? But now you are what? Light. You are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. And he talks about light. Sometimes we think about light and darkness. God associates Himself as being in the light. Being away from God is being in darkness. And that characteristic follows and will even follow into eternity. What will those who are lost, where will they be found in? Outer darkness. It's a scary thought. Completely separated from God in punishment. In the fires of hell, in outer darkness. If you're afraid of the dark now, you don't want to wind up in darkness forever. Again, I'm straying a little bit. But I do that to make the point that living in darkness, that's a way of life, that's a way that, and it's what he's saying, you formerly lived like this. You formerly were in the light. You formerly were in the darkness. Now walk as children of light. Children of light. What are the characteristics? What's the fruit? All goodness and kindness and truth. Think about this idea of light. What does a plant need to grow? In addition to dirt and nutrients, sunlight. For the most part, most plants rely on sunlight due to the photosynthesis. They make their own energy, their own fuel out of sunlight. And there is maybe a metaphor, there's a relation that Paul here, by inspiration, is bringing into us. You're thinking about light and then the fruit of light. Being in, walking according to God and being imitators of God brings about certain fruit. It produces things in us. All goodness and righteousness and, what's that last word? Truth. I think a lot of people in the religious world today, they want to stay away from this truth idea. Well, nobody can really know truth, and it doesn't really matter what you believe. And God puts truth right along there with it, and striving to know the truth, and emphasizing the truth, and reading the Word and just finding out, okay, what really is true? What does it say about a certain subject? And truth is there right in here with it. That's one of the fruits of walking according to what God would have you to walk in. And I think there's something there that we should be emphasized. Yeah. My version says trying to learn what is pleasing to the Lord. I think some other versions put it a little differently, but it's the same idea. Proving what is well-pleasing to the Lord. Again, how do we do that? Doesn't matter what you believe as long as you're sincere? You know, there are people, there's one church that teaches that once you're saved, you're always saved. There's another church over here that says, no, that's not true. There's another one over here that says, it really doesn't matter what you believe in anything, Universalist Church. There are some that say, well, there's really nothing wrong with homosexuality. Homosexuals should be ordained to preach just like anyone else. There's another that says, no, that's not right. We can accept them and they can be part of our church, but they can't preach. And there's another that says that it's totally wrong. Well, who decides what's right? God does. And how do you find out what God decided about it? You go into His Word. And that's why we emphasize truth to the extent that we do. Now, don't make it all just a subject of trying to figure out and trying to tell everybody what's right and what's wrong. And don't forget goodness and righteousness. You know, sometimes we can be correct on the doctrinal position, and we can be awfully harsh on people when they make a mistake and remind them, well, I just think you should have been withdrawn from them, even though the person's repented. I saw that recently. Someone had made a mistake and had corrected it, made every effort in her life to correct it, and had people still telling her, well, you should have been withdrawn from that, even though she had corrected it. It made no sense whatsoever. Righteousness, goodness, those are to characterize us as well. Trying to learn what is pleasing to the Lord. And He again says, don't participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness. They're going back to that idea of fruit, producing fruit. You're not going to produce anything good from darkness. He keeps reminding them of this, doesn't He? He doesn't just say it once. He repeats it. Again, I think He understood that these were people who had problems with some of these things. We live in a society where we can have problems with these things. But instead, do what? Verse 11. You'll have a variation in some of your versions here. Okay, expose is what my New King James says that, New American Standard does too. I think the Old King James says reprove, doesn't it? The idea of exposing them. What do you think He's thinking about there? It certainly wouldn't allow putting up with it and tolerating it in your midst, would it? I was just thinking of that. Doug points out the Corinthian church. They were tolerating a man there who was living in a lifestyle of fornication, living with his stepmother, apparently. And they were just letting that go. Puffed up about it. No, expose them. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, Steve puts this way, which I think very well says it. Darkness and light don't exist together, and if you are in the light, you are going to be exposing these things that are unfruitful seeds of deeds of darkness. Excuse me. Then he says in verse 12, it is disgraceful even to speak of the things which are done by them in secret. When I read, and I use commentaries because I think they can help, but I don't want to just use commentaries and rely on everything they say. The two that I referenced, both said that this likely had a reference to the pagan rituals that were associated with worship of Diana there, Aphrodite, in that society. That probably the things that went on inside there, and history, secular history, tells us a lot about that, and we don't want to talk about that here. But it would involve a sexual immorality. And to go about speaking of those things, it's disgraceful even to speak of the things which are done by them in secret. I've thought about that verse a lot over the years. Again, I think that could go back even to those few verses that we talked about in verse 4. No filthiness, coarse jesting, things like that. This would even be deeper than that, probably, to speak of those things. We have to be careful about what we talk about. And this idea in verse 13, I think, really fits in well with what Steve said a few minutes ago. All things become visible when they are exposed by the light. Everything that becomes visible is light. So you think about that for a second. Is it possible that the gospel and the gospel living in a person, and when you contrast that person with one who's not, that it exposes it, everything that becomes visible is light? That's something that I think of there. Did any of you have any other way of looking at that? Sure. Sandy points out, I'll try to repeat, because she said several things, that are, and she said them very well. I hope I'll do justice to them. Sometimes we have the idea we're just not going to have anything to do with someone, let's say there's a Christian, and we'll just avoid them. But it really, the idea here of exposing this, and it's motivated by love, and we see that in love several times through here. If we truly love that person, we are going to go the extra mile to try to help them come out of this. Okay, that's part of exposing this. It's not tolerating it, but it's exposing it. It's bringing light to it. And I didn't do justice to how she put it. I just couldn't remember everything. But hopefully that was a good summary. And hopefully a lot of you heard her. Rob, I'm sorry. Yeah. If we don't do something about it, Rob says, they may lead others into their sin. We know that happens. It happens a lot, especially in family relationships. The head of the house can drag the whole family down. For this reason, it says, verse 14, "Awake, sleeper, arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you." Awake, sleeper, spiritually asleep. Find yourself in that category. Do something about it. Arise from the dead. Christ will shine on you. Be careful, therefore, how you walk. Not as unwise, but as wise. And there's a lot that we'd be said, but I think this just didn't have to have a lot added to it to understand what it's saying. making the most of your time. I think we kind of alluded to that earlier, didn't we? For the days are evil. What do you think he's thinking about there? Think of the word redeem is what some versions say. One commentator says, not really talking about necessarily making a payment on. I don't know if he was right about that or not. But one said, use the time you have left. Make use of your time wisely. You know, we're given so much time. How do we spend that time? Do we spend it in front of the television watching a movie, a football game, some silly show with a lot of silly talk that we talked about earlier? Are we using it profitably spiritually? I'm not saying we shouldn't ever just sit down and watch a football game. If that's all we do, if you spend 8 hours in front of the television and you don't pick up the Bible, something's wrong. And I think this all fits in. Awake, sleeper, rise from the dead. Be careful how you walk. Be wise. Make the most of your time because the days are evil. Steve reminded us of the words of Solomon, particularly young people. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days draw nigh. And there will be a time in our lives we're not going to be able to do as much as we once did. Particularly when you get into older age, physical limitations prevent you from going out and doing some things. Doesn't mean you can't do anything. Doesn't mean you can't be renewed inwardly, spiritually, day by day. But you may not have the ability to go out and conduct 3 Bible studies a week because your body may not allow you to do it. You know, there are things that you can do now, earlier in life, while you have time and opportunity, that you may not be able to later. I think that is definitely one aspect of that that would be true. The days are evil. Do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. That same idea we've already seen here. Trying to learn what is pleasing to the Lord. That kind of thing. Do not get drunk with wine. For that is dissipation. Wine was something that apparently was in part of this society. It would have been something that was used there, and he had to remind Christians, don't be involved in this. That is dissipation. What's some other versions say there? Debauchery. I think one version says riot. I think most of us understand what happens when people get drunk and they get together and have a drinking party, and they start being involved in all kinds of certain things. That's particularly bad at college campuses. But be filled with the Spirit. Don't fill yourselves up with those kind of things. That's what we were talking about a few minutes ago. I think Steve brought up. Fill them with the Spirit. Speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. Singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. You want something to make yourself feel good? Be involved in that kind of thing. Instead of going to a wild party on Friday night, go to a singing. I know we spend a lot of time, and well, we should, using these verses to point out how God expects to be worshipped. But don't forget the context of what's being said here. He's writing to Christians. You know, don't walk unwise. Don't walk in this life of debauchery. Walk in a good way. Go to good things. Do good things. Have a singing at your house. Edify one another with those kind of things. And the idea here, the word solo, I think it's called, and I'm not a Greek expert, but you know, it's almost as if you're plucking the heart. Not an instrument, plucking the heart. And it was centuries before anyone introduced instrumental music into the worship in churches. Now that in and of itself doesn't prove anything, but it's an interesting point. And we don't have time to make this a discussion on instrumental music. Again, our emphasis is going to be what are we going to get from this, okay? But it is an interesting study, and we can make a long study of it. But in every instance of worship, and this doesn't say anything about being in the assembly, that I can see. It would definitely include it. But every instance of worship, speaking to one another in psalms and hymns, spiritual songs, there is no addition of instruments to it. Singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. And what's tied in with that? Verse 20. Something we've already seen again. Giving thanks for all things in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ to God, even the Father. The idea we're giving thanks, we're giving it in the name of the Lord. Is that some three-word phrase we're supposed to utter at the end of every prayer because that's the requirement? Is that really what that's getting at? I don't think so. I'm not saying there's anything wrong. I don't feel right really even uttering that phrase. I've thought about in the past saying that up front in the past in the prayer. And even when I do, I still don't feel right. It's not saying in Jesus' name. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But don't let that just be what that means to you. In the name of the Lord. You think about by the authority of the Lord. Christ being our mediator. It is by Christ that we can go to God. He makes that relationship possible. And be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. Now that, my version makes a break beginning at 22. I'm not so sure 21 doesn't really belong with 22. You know, there are people who decide what sections belong where, and Brent and I were studying this. We kind of got together and how we might think how to break this up, and we corroborated just how we would do it, and I had seen my version stop at 21. I said, well, let's stop at 21. Then I read it again. I'm thinking, well, 21 kind of belongs with 22. Be subject to one another. Think about that. It is part of what we're going to study. What do we think about? Turn over to Philippians 2. I haven't brought a lot of other passages in, and probably I should have, because they would be helpful. Philippians 2 and verse 3. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regard one another as more important than yourselves. Don't merely look out for your own personal interest, but for the interest of others. And it goes on to talk about Christ. Christ certainly embodied that. He was in heaven with God. He actually came to earth, lived as a man. Even though he retained his deity, he lived as a man. And gave himself upon the cross. So if you tie that in with this passage here in Ephesians, you know, be subject to one another. We've emphasized in the past how this book talks about unity, being one with one another. If we can put on these characteristics, I think it would help us a lot in terms of any problems we might have with one another. Any thoughts that you have, Steve?
Last point is that it's kind of the main invitation.
Yeah, and I'll try to summarize again, as I say often, I won't be able to do justice to it. Steve emphasized, it's almost as if Paul's preaching a sermon here, and he's emphasizing our walk. That's probably one thing that I failed to emphasize in this passage, in this book, because that does really come out at you here, your walk, being putting away the old man, putting away the new man in various aspects of our lives. And we'll continue to see that with wives, husbands, children, parents, slaves, masters. It's a very practical book. It really speaks to us, and I think we can really get his points without having to dig and think too deep. I appreciate your point, your comments. Lord willing, we'll pick up with verse 22 Wednesday night.